Now, the teaching tonight is going to be the power and the necessity of testimonies, and also correcting possible misconceptions. And so, there's something that I've always known about testimonies, but did you know you're commanded to give your testimony? No. Pay attention. Put your push down. But we were commanded to give our testimonies. Yeah, I know about the word stuff like that, but when Yahweh does a great thing in your life, we should go on and brag about it. You know, this was how important was it for the war of Egypt with Moses and the Egyptians and the Pharaohs? What was the purpose of that? We know for 40 years Yahweh was being advertised, and all the people in Canaan were given an opportunity to get out. They had a 40-year eviction notice. We're coming. And the Gibeonites, what do? They go, okay, hey, we don't want to fight the creator of the universe. They changed. But how important was it? And here's these testimonies and testimonies and testimonies. And for some reason, we do have a war going on inside of us. We have an old man and a new man, the first Adam and the last Adam. Right? Who's the last Adam? 1 Corinthians 15, be Jesus Christ or Yehoshua. And guess what your old man tells you? Nobody cares about your testimony. That's what it tells you. And then you're like, nobody's going to believe me. And so we'll turn to Genesis 29. And so it'll be the...
Anybody got their cell phone? Turn them off.
I've got mine. Mm-hmm. I turned mine off already.
You got a very bad signal here.
I turned mine off.
Mm-hmm.
One of these is going to teach you down here without any loopers.
Yeah, I'm still looking at
it. You don't hear any running water, do you?
At least there wasn't
one
over you.
Yeah.
It's just a drip.
Yeah,
don't look up. I think Tim will listen to me next time.
Genesis chapter 29, page 60.
At least it wasn't a light wasn't above your head and it started dripping on you.
Okay, page 60. Genesis
29. Yeah.
First one. So again, the teaching is going to be about the power and necessity of testimonies and also correcting possible misconceptions. If somebody would read the chapter 29, verse 15 through 20, please.
Then said Laban to Jacob, "It is because my brother thou art, that thou shouldest serve me for naught. Come tell me, what shall my wages be?" Now Laban had two daughters, the name of the elder Leah, and the name of the younger Rachel. But the eyes of Leah were weak, where Rachel was comely in form and comely in countenance. So Jacob loved Rachel, and he said, "I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter." And Laban said, "Better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me." So Jacob served Rachel 7 years, and they became in his eyes as a single day for his love for to her.
That's good right there. So this is one of my favorite verses that actually I wasn't even really aware of it until I watched A Night with the King. And A Night with the King, which is an excellent movie, but the story of Hadassah or Esther. And it says that Jacob served, he worked. Okay, so as of right now, the average income in the United States might be $40,000. Shekinah's might be $30,000. Jacob said he'd work 7 years to marry this girl. 7 years. Just to marry her. So if that was a 30, was 3 times 7. And they didn't say that all the wages went to this, but how badly did Jacob desire Rachel? And so when I look at that, and what does it say after that? So Jacob served Rachel 7 years, and they became in his eyes as single days. Why is that important, at least to me? That's with anything that Yahweh has you dream big about. Sometimes the world's going to say, just settle. Don't shoot too high. You don't want to be disappointed. Lower your standards. You don't get hurt. That's what the world says, right? But there was a woman that was placed in Jacob's life that he loved her so much, he worked. How old are you? You're 10?
Almost
10. Yeah. So can you imagine 7 years of your life somebody worked just to be with you? Esther, how would you like a guy that would work 7 years just to try to be your boyfriend? He'd go to your dad and go, "I want to date Esther." Your dad goes, "Oh yeah? Prove it. I'll work for you for 7 years. Sounds good. Wouldn't that be neat? And now you can think about it. You know, what Jacob loved, or the word is Ahab, In the Hebrew, the word love is ahav. It's one word. And, but Jacob loved Rachel so much. Now, what kind of girl was Rachel?
Faith.
Yeah, so you think, man, this begins something real interesting. You know what turned in verse 29? Now, Jacob was tricked by his father-in-law, Laban, and he ended up marrying two girls, the older, which was Leah, and Rachel. And so there was a trick that Laban said. Anyways, he tricks Jacob. Jacob thinks he's marrying Rachel. He ends up marrying Leah. And Laban goes, well, you can't marry Rachel without marrying Leah first. He goes, I tell you, I'll give you both daughters, but you got to work for another 7 years. How many years did Jacob work for Rachel?
14.
How old are you?
12.
Now, girls, I mean, what girl would not want a guy that worked 14 years for? How cool is that? Is that neat? Is that romance? Is that desire? Is that something you really, really, really want? Isn't that neat? And the other neat thing was is that we learned that why, in my opinion, did Laban do this to Jacob? Because Yahweh will prosper the righteous, won't he? That which you sow, you will reap. And in my opinion, Laban knew that as soon as Jacob leaves, he's lost all his wealth. He had to find a way, in my opinion, he had to find some way to keep Jacob working for him. Because as soon as Jacob leaves, so does his wealth. So what he did is he tricked him. He got 14 years of work. But anyways, I kind of went off. And we turn. Now let's take a look at what kind of woman Rachel is. Chapter 31. So it doesn't have to be a spouse. It could be a job. It could be retirement. It could be a position. What is it? So Yahweh wants all of us to dream big. 31 verse 1. Now, I need an adult to read quite a bit. We're going to read a little bit about. Actually, I'll read if you guys are ready. I'll tag team you. Chapter 31 verse 1. Now I'm going to read most of a chapter just to find out what kind of woman Rachel is. Then heard the words of the sons of Laban, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that belongeth to our father. Yea, out of what belongeth to our father hath he made all this wealth. And Jacob looked upon the face of Laban, and lo, it was not with him as aforetime. So Laban didn't like him anymore. What do we know about Jacob, regardless of what people say? Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. Who loved Jacob? Yahweh did. So right there, they're blaming Jacob, saying Jacob's stealing from Laban. Yahweh never says that about Jacob. But they're saying that now the sons of Laban are saying Jacob's robbing our father. And Jacob looks and goes, this situation isn't working out anymore. Verse 2, and Jacob looked at the face of Laban, and lo, he was not with him as aforetime. Then said Yahweh unto Jacob, return thy land of thy fathers and thy kindred, and I may be with thee. So Jacob sent and called for Rachel, which means little lamb, or lamb of El, or lamb of God, for Leah, to the field unto his flock. And he said unto him, to both of his wives, Beholding am I the face of your father that is not towards me as aforetime. Nevertheless, the Elohim of my father hath been with me, and ye know that with all my vigor have I served your father. But your father hath deceived me, hath changed my wages. How many times? 10 times. Yet the Elohim hath not suffered him to deal harmfully with me. If thus, it kind of reminds me a lot of Joseph, doesn't it? Here's Joseph, here's his situation, he's working, he's doing righteous, bad things are happening, he prospers wherever he goes. Verse 8, and thus he said, the speckled shall be thy wages. So how did he get paid? He would have got paid with livestock. So Laban would try to trick him to go, there's no speckled sheep. So all the babies who have speckles on, those will be yours, Jacob. So here's what Jacob says. But if thus he said, the speckled shall be thy wages, then do all the flock bringeth forth speckled. But if thus he saith, the ring straight shall be thy wages, then do all the flock bearing forth ring straight. So Laban will say, all the polka dot sheep that come out, they'll be yours. And before he would say that, they're weren't even like polka dot sheep. Mm-hmm. But who is blessing Laban? Yahweh, for Jacob's sake. And so he's like, you can imagine, all the sheep are white. And Laban goes, okay, from now on, I'll just give you all the sheep that are black. Guess what happened? All the sheep started producing black. He went, yikes! Now I got to give them all the black sheep. Okay, we got to figure something else out. He goes, okay, Jacob, From now on, all the sheep that are like zebras will be yours, Jacob. Guess what happened to all the sheep then? They all came out like zebras. Who was doing this? Yahweh was doing it. And Jacob knows it was Yahweh that was doing it. Yahweh was blessing him. And Laban was learning that as soon as he loses Jacob, he loses Yahweh's blessing. Why didn't Laban just turn to Yahweh? I don't know. I do not know. It kind of reminds me of like a Potiphar or something like that. But it reminds of all of us of our different jobs and stuff. Wherever we go, Yahweh will prosper us. And wherever Joseph went, he always remembered that Yahweh was watching him. Wherever you go, and actually when you're obedient and secret and nobody sees and you don't get any credit for doing what's right, guess who's really honored? Yahweh. When you pick up a piece of trash out of the yard, whose yard is that? It's Yahweh's. And you don't tell anybody about it, who that shows Yahweh that you're doing it for him, and he's going to bless you. Verse 9, So hath Elohim stripped away the herds of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass in the season when the flock were in heat, then lifted up my eyes and beheld a dream, and lo, the he-goats were leaping of the flocks with ring stripes speckled and dappled. And the messenger of Elohim said unto me in a dream, Yaakov or Jacob. And I said, Behold me. Then he said, Lift, I pray thee, thine eyes and behold. Can you imagine going fishing? They go, all the catfish you... Anyways, verse 13. I'll try to get off that. Verse 13. I am the El of Bethel. Bethel means house of El. Where thou didst anoint a pillar. Where thou didst vow to me a vow. Now, rise, go forth out of this land and return unto the land of thy kindred. And that's got to be real scary to change your job. You know, Dad's changed his career. Tim's changed his career. Izzy's changed his career. I've been pretty fortunate. I've never had to do that quite yet. That could be some scary stuff. Leave your town. So you always tell them to leave. Then responded Rachel and Leah and said unto him, Have we any longer any portion of inheritance in the house of our father? Are we not accounted aliens to him, seeing that having sold us, he hath then gone on devouring our silver? Surely all the riches which Elohim has stripped off of our father unto us, it belongeth unto our sons. Now therefore, whatsoever Elohim hath said unto thee, do. So his wives were on board. So Jacob arose and mounted his sons and his wives on the camels and drave all of his herd. Would somebody start reading verse 17?
17?
Yeah.
Jacob arose and mounted his sons and his wives on the camels and drave away all his herds and all the goods which he had gathered, the gains he had gained, which he had gathered in Padan Aram, that he might go in unto Isaac his father into the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, so Rachel stole the household gods or treasures that belonged to her father.
Okay, right there. What did Rachel do? So what do we know about Rachel so far? First, she tells her husband, do whatever Yahweh tells you to do, do it. Then what does she do next?
She steals
what from her father?
The temple's idols.
Household gods.
Idols.
Okay, now keep reading. Then say Leah does it. Okay.
Okay, verse 20. Thus Jacob stole away unaware to Laban the Syrian, in that he had not told him that he was about to flee. So he fled, he and all that he had, and arose and passed over the river, and set his face towards the mountains of Gilead. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled. So he took his brethren with him, and pursued after him a journey of 7 days, and overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. And Yahweh, or Elohim, said unto Laban the Syrian in a dream of the night, he said to him, Take heed to thyself, that thou speak not with Jacob, either good or bad. So then Laban came up with Jacob. Jacob, having pitched his tent in the mountain, Laban also with his brethren pitched in the mountain of Gilead. Then said Laban to Jacob, What hast thou done, that thou wouldst steal away unawares to me, and shouldest carry off my daughters as captives of the sword? Wherefore didst thou secretly flee and rob me, and didst not tell me that I might send thee away with rejoicing and with songs, with timbrel and with lyre, and didst not suffer me to kiss my sons and my daughters? Now hast thou done foolishly. It is in the power of my hand to deal with thee for harm, but the Elohim of your father last night spake unto me, saying, Take heed to thyself, that thou speak not with Jacob, either good or bad. But now thou
though thou didst even take thy journey, because thou didst sorely long for the house of thy father, wherefore didst thou steal away my Elohims or my gods? And Jacob answered and said unto Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, lest thou take by force thy daughters from me. He with whom thou found thy Elohims or gods shall not live before our brethren, not thou for thyself what is with me, and take what is thine. Neither did Jacob know that Rachel had stole them. Then entered Laban into the tent of Jacob, and into the tent of Leah, and unto the tent of the two handmaids, and found nothing, and went forth out of the tent of Leah, and entered in the tent of Rachel. Now Rachel had taken the household gods, and put them in a basket saddle of the camel, and taken her seat upon them. And Laban felt about through all the tent, and found them not. And he said unto her father, and she said unto her father, let it not be vexing in thy eyes of my Lord, that I cannot rise up at thy presence, for the way of the woman is upon me.
So she had the household of gods underneath her. She's sitting on the camel. And this is the first account that we know in history that a woman blames something on her period. Do guys like to hear about girls' periods and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
No. But she was very smart. She goes, Dad, I'd get up, but I'm having my period. But he went, yee, or my period. What was she doing? She was hiding household gods. Not images of Yahweh. We weren't supposed to have that. So that is an image of Rachel. What does that look like Rachel is? It is hilarious. Rachel's watching here. The first woman who blamed something on her period was Rachel.
She's a bloody thief.
She's a bloody
thief.
Anyway, okay. So... what did it appear? Now we're going to get on to testimonies. We are commanded to give our testimonies. Yahweh says, go tell people what great things I have done. Go witness. Go tell things. Go do things. Anyways, I was at work. I went to go work out. I wanted to go work out. That's what I desire to do. It's what I feel I have a calling to minister to people in the gym. These are not people that go to church. So it's like a direct marketing thing. And before I went to go work out, I worked late. I got a word. Don't work out. Go out to eat. Well, if you want to be in shape, first you go to work and you don't go out to eat. It's not what I want to do. It was confirmed. That's called a word of knowledge. Don't go. Do this. Okay, so I'm supposed to go eat. So then I got a word of wisdom. Ask somebody to go with you. Well, I don't know. It's 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night. I have one single friend who would be able to go out to eat like that. So I called my friend Ben, left him a voicemail. I said, I'm going to go get something to eat. If you want to go, give me a call back. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm even supposed to be doing. I'm not happy. I'll be real honest. I'm pouting. I'm in my suit, and I'm going to go out to eat by myself instead of working out. As I'm driving, I get close to downtown Wichita. The phone rings. He goes, where are you? I said, I'm by downtown Wichita. He goes, great. I want to talk to you. Let's get something to eat. We'll go downtown. Okay, so he was excited. He wanted to share something with me. We go to the sports bar, Old Chicago, and as we sit there, I've been raising somebody up into the Word, explaining some things, and he's been real excited about being obedient. The Matthew 6:33 tells people, put Yahweh's Word first. Give to Yahweh first, and He'll give to you all the rest of these things. And this was actually working out in his life. He met a girl down in Dallas, Texas. It's a Yahweh thing. The odds, there's no explanation. He's prophesying to her. He's talking to her about speaking in tongues. And this girl is receptive. What are the odds? What are the odds? Here's all this stuff. And I'm listening to this guy. And I start witnessing to him. And as I start witnessing him, once I start moving my mouth, I'm sure all of you guys have been there too. Guess what happens? Incredible words of wisdom start coming out of my mouth that I had no intellect about. And I'm listening, it's going, whoa, that's incredible. That. And basically, what was happening is Yahweh was ministering to somebody, giving counsel, giving like prophecies to somebody that needed words. So I'm sitting there and I go, if Yahweh is going to introduce you to His daughter, if this is His daughter, and you drive all the way down there to meet her, don't expect that all the work is done once you get there. And he looks at me and goes, what's that supposed to mean? This was news to me too. He goes, what's that supposed to mean? I said, in the biblical times, if you were going to be courting a woman, you would give a dowry. And actually, we know what does Hebrews 11:6 say? Without what, it is impossible to be well-pleasing.
Faith.
I'm speaking these words, and this is a teaching for me. And I'm going, my ears are going, did you get that? Yeah, I got this coming out of your mouth. Wow, that's amazing. I'm sitting here going like this. Other people are listening to this, and I go, we know what our Father wants. We know if she's a child of Yahweh, if she's a daughter of the God of Most High, then we know what he likes. He likes faith. And he goes, what is that supposed to mean? I go, well, it could be you go down there, you meet her, he arranged all this, and it could be as soon as you meet her, she takes off running. Would that require faith? He goes, man, that would stink. And I go, but that would require faith. And then all of a sudden, this whole teaching started coming out about dowry. And I said a thing about a dowry. He goes, what the world is a dowry? And to be honest with you, I really didn't know a whole lot about dowries at the time. And I said, well, what a dowry is that in biblical times, they even do it now in Africa and in China and stuff, that if you were going to get married, and this is not necessarily what it is, this is to my understanding, that if I was going to marry Tim's daughter, what I would do is I would give a large sum of money or something. I said that David, when he was going to try to marry Saul's daughter, he said, I don't have any money to give you a dowry. And Saul said, I don't need money. I want foreskins for my enemies. So David, he goes, I'll give you 100. King Saul goes, give me 100 foreskins of my enemies. There's your dowry. And David gave him 200 foreskins. And they were counted too. It specifically says that. He goes, foreskins as a dowry? I go, yeah. And then all of a sudden this whole teaching came out about faith. This isn't about courting. This is not about dating. It's about something that Yahweh puts on each one of our hearts to go, once you get there, don't expect that you're not going to produce any faith. That's the old man inside of us that tells us that eventually we're going to have to stop producing faith. Eventually we're going to arrive, and even in our mind, a lot of times I used to think that paradise will be a place I'll never require any faith. Actually, when we go to the third heaven and third earth, there'll probably be more faith will be required, right? It just makes sense. But anyways, as these words are coming out, which were probably more from me than him, and I'm sitting there listening to a teaching, I'm going, what is going on here? There's a cash register right in front of us. And this is what the cash register pops up. So you can zoom in on this. Tell me when you're done zooming in. And I'm not big on numbers. You know, people are always people that don't believe in prophecies and stuff, they're always looking for numbers and signs. What are the signs? Well, Yahweh gives us manifestations for signs, but I get a word of knowledge. Something is going on with the cash register. It says 1818. What does that mean? I got a word of wisdom. Take a picture of it. So I'm like, how long is that going to stay up there? As soon as the bartender's finally pulls a ticket out, this thing's going to disappear. So I go scrambling as fast as I can for my phone to take a picture. And he looks at it and goes, it's 1818. And he sees it and he goes, wow, what is it? What does it mean? What does it mean? I don't know. I'm supposed to take a picture. So I take a picture and people are looking at me like I'm a lunatic. But I had a feeling there was something with 1818. He goes, what does it mean? I go, I don't know. I said, I've never felt a desire to take a picture. I've never felt a desire to look at any numbers before. He goes, what do you think it means? I go, I wonder if it's a Bible verse. He says, so he pulls out his Bible, and there's people everywhere at Old Chicago listening to us. He goes, I'm going to look at Proverbs 18:18. I go, I've got a word of wisdom. 1 Samuel 18:18. Turn there. So I sit there and go, oh, maybe it means nothing. Maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing, right? And then Tim's going to be reading out the King James here in a second. So Donna, if you could grab that blue Bible for Tim. My weathered Bible.
Ours has been flooded.
So just what does this mean? Maybe it means nothing. Have you ever got something like that? You get an impulse. Hey, grab that. Maybe that means something. Maybe it means nothing. And it's not real clear. That requires a lot of faith to do it, doesn't it? Would somebody please read verse 18 to 25?
And David said unto Saul, who am I? Or who are my kinsfolk? The family of my father in Israel, that I should become son-in-law to the king. But it came to pass within the time for giving Merab, his daughter of Saul, to David, that she was given to Adriel, the Melohite, to wife. Then did Michal, Saul's daughter, love David. And it was told Saul, and the thing was right in his eyes. And Saul said to himself, I will give her unto him, that she may prove to him a snare, and that the hand of the Philistines may be upon him. So then Saul said unto David a second time, Mayest thou become my son-in-law today? And Saul commanded his servants, Speak ye unto David quietly, saying, Lo, the king delighteth in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now, therefore, become thou son-in-law to the king. And the servants of Saul spake in the ears of David these words. And David said, Something it a light thing in your eyes to become son-in-law to the king, seeing that I am a poor man and lightly esteemed? So the servants of Saul told him, saying, According to these words spake David. Then said Saul, Thus shall say unto David, The king hath no delight in purchase price, but rather in a 100 foreskin of the Philistines, by avenging himself on the enemies of the king.
Okay, so Dave gives him 200 foreskins. You can imagine, as I was explaining to somebody what a dowry was, and I said, here's King David, was asked to marry the king's, or he wasn't the king at the time, it's there, marry Saul's daughter. He goes, I can't afford a dowry. And I read 18:18, what does it say? David goes, I can't afford a dowry. And if Tim would read verse 25 in the King James.
25?
Yeah.
And Saul said, Thus shall ye say to David, The king desireth not any dowry.
So the Rotherham says a purchase price. But so here I was, and it would appear to be a random place, not where I wanted to be. And as soon as I read this, I got goosebumps and everything changed. I had an earnest desire. I got to go now, and I got to go research. What in the world is going on? Yahweh has sent me a number of different messages, and now I have been really stimulated. You know, have you ever been not very hungry, and all of a sudden you start smelling fresh bread or something? Now I have to eat. We wrap up stuff, the fellowship, I wrap up fellowship, pay my tab. I didn't even know I had this picture. I got to work today that I did take a picture. I didn't think I got it. And Yahweh was, check your phone. I'm like, I don't have time to check my phone. I go through 150 pictures, and there it is. He goes, there it is. Print it off. I'm like, oh, imagine that. I go, what is a dowry? What is this thing? Why didn't Rotherham translate that dowry? What does it mean? What does it mean? Here's all the stuff. So I'm driving home. I completely forgot about the gym, all the rest of this stuff. And I think the whole point of that was a teaching was getting ready to unveil. Now, before I even get into my... Actually, can I get one of those sheets, please? Before I even get into my house, there's such a hunger to find out what does this clue mean. I pull into my driveway. My garage door is not down. The keys are not in my ignition. I go, what's going on here? So I look up the Hebrew word for dowry, King James, or purchase price in the Rotherham. And here's what the theological word study of the Old Testament is going to say about this Hebrew word. And then you guys have your own copies. And it will start 11 verse 53. So if somebody, like a good reader, will read until the bibliography. Actually, it'll start, you'll see the mark, the fiancé. Or actually, I can read it.
I can read it.
Okay.
You want me to read?
Where are we?
It starts off with the fiancé.
And then read to?
All the way to the bibliography.
Okay.
And so this is the Hebrew word, mahar.
The fiancé who gives wedding money is not thereby presenting gifts to the family or the girl. These are to be clearly distinguished as in Genesis 34:12. The gifts were presents and rewards for accepting the proposal of marriage, but the wedding money was given in addition to these. Then go to wedding money, bride price.
No, okay. Rebecca's case in Genesis 24.
Sorry. Rebecca's case in Genesis 24:53, also Genesis 29:24 and 29, Josh 15:18-19, and 1 Kings 9:16. Wedding money, mohar, wedding money, bride price. There are only three instances of this word in the scriptures: Genesis 34:12, Exodus 22:16. 1 Samuel 18:25. The mohar was a sum of money or its equivalent which the fiancé paid to the girl's father as a compensation to the family. It was not, strictly speaking, the purchase price, but the customary wedding money.
Exodus 21, 7 through 11 illustrates the outright purchase of a maidservant to be a concubine. Note also the penalty for violating a girl's virginity, Deuteronomy 22, 29. See the contrast between wedding money and marriage and refusal of marriage and penalty to a seducer in Exodus 22, 16 through 17. Jacob paid in services for his marriages to Leah and Rachel, Genesis 29, 15 through 30. David performed a valiant deed in battle for Saul's daughter. Is that Michal?
Michal.
1 Samuel 18, 25 through 27. Just as
Othniel
did for Caleb's daughter, Joshua 15, 16. Hamor's son Shechem was willing to pay any sum to Jacob for his daughter Dinah. Genesis 34:11. Apparently, the father was allowed to enjoy the use of the wedding money, but it would revert to the bride at her father's death, or if the death of her husband reduced her to poverty. What else could have prompted the complaint of Rachel and Leah that their father Laban had devoured their money after having sold them? Genesis 31:15. The Babylonian law called for the fiancé to pay to the girl's father, or sometimes to the girl herself, the terhat, a sum varying from 1 to 50 shekels of silver. According to Assyrian law, the terhatu was given to the girl either as a compensation for her loss of virginity or as insurance in the event that her husband died. Even today, among Palestinian Arabs, the fiancé pays a mar to the girl's parents.
Isn't that interesting? So actually, so I had you start a little. That's a different word. I started on mohar. So this is that word, mohar. And what does it say? Did you notice? It mentioned the word insurance. That gives a completely different. So this is the theological word book of the Old Testament. What they're going to say about this word is they're saying that the price of, which was really neat for me, because my favorite verse is Genesis 29:20. It's one of my favorites. I didn't know that Jacob served 7 years as a mohar. I didn't know that. I know it was a dowry. I just thought he just wanted to work for it. I didn't also know that this dowry, this mohar, was a life insurance policy for the woman. How many people here know, at least this is according to theological word study, so I'm going to put that waiver on there. How many people here know that it was a very delicate time for women to live 3,000 years ago? Especially if you didn't have a guy to protect you. Was that a hard time? Why think there's so many harlots, prostitution, there's no way to make money, couldn't own land, all kinds of stuff. How many people, I didn't know this either, the money that Jacob would have paid Laban, the 7 years for each bride, according to this, would have been a life insurance policy for Rachel. Had Jacob died, it would have taken care of her. Does that paint a different picture of Jacob, Rachel now? Now, you can imagine that Laban, according to these customs, made Jacob pay this thing. And what do we know about Laban? Laban, according to Scripture, Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. Laban was a wicked guy. And here it was, and Laban even goes, I would have gave you a feast. Really, you know, a tree by its fruit. You changed his wages 10 times. You tricked him. It didn't work out. I believe it was acknowledged good because who was Jesus Christ's grandmother? Mm-hmm. Rachel or Leah?
Leah.
Judah. I believe Yahweh knew that Leah was going to have Judah. Okay. But anyways, what did Rachel and Leah say when they're leaving? Our father cashed in our life insurance policy. Who's going to take care of us? Had Jacob died, who's going to take care of her? Now, does that give a completely different picture about her stealing household gods? Could it possibly have been justifiable? Going, he robbed us. And so we look at these things, and had I not been witnessing to somebody, I would have never looked at this word. I'm going, does this paint a different picture of a possible misconception of Rachel? I used to look at Genesis 29:20 as wonderful, but I don't want a Rachel. She ripped off her dad. Then she blamed it on her period. Who would want that? That's what I thought. I would think that if I wanted a wife, I want a Rebecca. Which Rebecca was, in my opinion, she produced a lot of faith. She was an incredible woman. But I had no idea of a whole other picture of Rachel. And you know, it says, be seeking, be asking, be knocking. It's, and Yahweh wants us, what does it say? The glory of Yahweh is to conceal things. And he wants us to search things out. And what is it all coming back down to? Not only did this open and paint a different picture of me about Rachel, what does it also say possibly about Yahweh and how he looked out for women back then? Is that righteous? Is that justice? Then a guy goes, I want your daughter? Okay, well then you're going to have to pay a mohar. It can be a foreigner. What's a mohar? Mohar is a big sum of price. Oh, I got a buyer? No, actually, if I die, she gets it. And if you die, she gets it. It's an insurance policy. It's going to take care of my daughter. That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go, if theological word book of the Old Testament is accurate, you're going to go, that shows a lot of righteousness. Isn't that neat? Yeah, I have no idea. This one little word right there. Like I read that about Rachel and going, golly, it's like her dad sold her. You put a mortgage, you know, it's cash in her life insurance policy. John 8:32 says, "What will make us free?" It says the truth will. And what's your? I'm really glad she's being honest.
She's talking about her dowry.
She's talking about her dowry. But all this is going to come back around about the power of testimonies and possible misconception is Yahweh got me moving. I started giving a testimony. Once my mouth started going, guess what happened? Wonderful things came out of my mouth that benefited me more than actual listener. You guys ever had that? Where you start giving somebody a pep talk? Don't quit now. What do you got? And all of a sudden you start giving them and you might not even know any verses. But do you know what you do know? Testimonies. How many kids don't know a single verse? But they can tell you what happened to their mom. How many kids don't know hardly any verses? But they can tell you what happened to their grandpa. How many people, adults, don't know a verse? But they can tell you what happened to their pastor, or to their neighbor, to one of these other things. Now, there's like two different, there's testimonies in the Bible, but there's a whole other power to personal testimonies. And all of us have that. Because when we sit around and we give a testimony, what happens? What happens to your faith when I give a testimony?
Builds up.
Does it stimulate? Does all of a sudden, do you start remembering your own testimonies? You go, wait a minute, I got one. And then she's got one. Then he's got one. He's got one. How powerful are these testimonies and these little things? And here's my little picture of the 1818. What are the odds? How powerful is this guy's testimony? Alexander Dowie. He raised people from the dead. He did a revival in the most wicked city in all the United States, in Chicago. He was doing great and mighty works. He was not Jesus Christ, but you want to read, you want to get faith built, we're supposed to feed on the word, number one. But then the rest of these things, you start reading about what this guy did. You know, he left his country to come here. Where did he come to the United States? He went to like Las Vegas. Where's the dirtiest place there is? I want it. And he did it. And he built this city. He's a foreigner. He's an alien. It's called Zion. Wow. And if it wasn't for Alexander Dowie, I probably would have never heard of Zion originally. Until my dad started teaching. What's Zion? I have no idea. How about this woman's testimony? Lillian Trasher. Here's a woman with hardly any vocation. And she gets a stirring while she's sitting on a train to go start an orphanage. Where? She ends up in Egypt. Muslim areas. They cut your heads off. They throw babies in the river and all kinds of stuff. And what does she do? She gets stirred and she goes. And how did hers start? It was a testimony on a train. How powerful was that testimony she heard on that train? How many children did she? They said towards the end of her life, these orphans were now judges, police chiefs, attorneys. They were coming to her. And how many things did Yahweh change to one little American woman? He said, here's another one. This guy's a plumber. Right? Smith Wigglesworth. I think he had a very poor education. You know what he did? He pulled somebody out of a casket and said, walk. Threw him up against the wall, and the body slithered down the wall. You know what he did? He picked him back up, and he said, I said walk! And can you imagine doing that at a funeral?
Wrong procession, next door.
And he picked him up, I said, walk! And guess what happened? The guy walked. And somebody wrote down his testimony. And this guy, when his ministry was getting started, guess what he was feeding off of? Testimonies. You might not remember the scriptures. You might not have your Bibles. You might not have a concordance. But you got testimonies. And who lives inside you? The author of the testimonies. And what happens when you start referencing them? It's like connecting to the internet. You do a word search. What about power? You go, all of a sudden this, and here's this, and here's this. And all of a sudden what you do is you get him moving. There's always enough. Here's Heidi Baker, another really neat one. Another testimony. Here's a girl growing up in California. It was a Long Beach or something like this. She has two guys courting her. One's about her age, and he's like the perfect guy. But Yahweh gave her a word. It's not him. She ends up marrying a guy that's 12 years older than her that did not fit the book necessarily, like what she was expecting. But she got a word. This is the guy. And where do they go? They go to Mozambique. And they started ministering in a dump. They're in the dump, you want to see what kind of faith did they have? Like a one-way ticket, one of the worst places in the world, in a dump. And you know what they also did with this woman did? What was her credentials? What was her resume? Here I am, send me. Here I am, send me. Isaiah 6:8. Here I am, send me. And she goes, I'll go. She went, and you know what? Somebody prophesied over her. And they says, you are going to heal blindness. Your hands are going to do this. And somebody said it. Did it work initially? No. But who was inside of her testifying going, it's going to work? Have you heard somebody tell you, give you a prophecy, and they say this is going to happen, you tried, it didn't work, but that dream doesn't go away? Have you ever had that? What is that? That's him testifying going, I haven't given up. It took a year she was trying to heal people's eyes. They were blind. A year of trying. How many of you would continue laying your hands going, I have been told I will heal the blind. And it didn't work again. Well, it didn't matter. It's going to work. And she did it for a year until what? It worked. And now actually it's one of her specialties. And then this is another really neat guy. Here's John G. Lake. Here's a guy, at the time he was making $50,000 a year, selling life insurance, which is, I think, the equivalent of like $800,000 a year now. It's a lot of money. And he got a stirring to go heal. And he heard some testimonies. I think his sister got healed by this guy. He's a businessman making like $800,000 a year. You ever heard of millionaires, guys? Yes. Who wants to be a millionaire? Well, most people would have wanted to be John G. Lake. He went to his boss and goes, I got a story that I'm supposed to go into ministry. The boss goes, you go ahead, you'll be back. He goes, why would you say? He goes, because people don't walk away from $800,000 life. It was $50,000 back then. His sister got healed by this guy. A testimony came to this guy. What did he do? I love this. It actually reminds me a lot of my father. Because what did he do on the top of his car? It's a huge billboard. It says, Dr. John G. Lake, Miracle Healing Power. And here's the address. Come get it.
I love it.
And guess what he did? The mighty works. Jesus Christ, Yahushua Mashiach, says, greater works will you do because I ascend to my Father. Did he say greater works to the adults? Does he get more glory or less glory by using a 7-year-old girl to heal somebody or a 30-year-old man? You'd get more from a kid, wouldn't it? You guys have a better resume than me. Did you know that? Did you know that? No, Aaron's got more from... No, all you need is, here I am, send me. All these things were started with testimonies. And this is where I really encourage all of us to spread your testimonies. I get hesitant to say to my testimonies. Do you know why? Because even after I get done saying them, I'm going to go, golly, I feel like an idiot. Maybe I just burned a bridge. They're not going to believe me. I had this one time, I was talking to Rachel. Rachel and I are cut from the same cloth in a couple of areas. We would appear to be like vagrants. We're wandering around and going to random places and stuff. And it's a stirring that Yahweh has in us. In Rachel and I, it's different than most people. But here I was supposed to go work out. Another testimony I'm working on. Yahweh says, don't go to this gym, go to this gym. What the heck? And Rachel calls me on my way to a gym I didn't want to go. And she goes, what are you doing? I go, I'm upset. I'm going to a gym I don't want to go. She goes, why? I go, I got a word of knowledge. I'm supposed to go to this gym I don't like. She starts laughing. She goes, well, you better obey him. You got a lot on the line. You're talking about all these promises you want. I'm like, shut up. And she's giggling. I walk into the gym. And as I walk into a gym in a very nice neighborhood, really nice neighborhood, guess who walks up to me? Two Kenyans. Aaron! Aaron, where have you been? We haven't seen you for a year and a half. I'm Moses. You remember Moses? I'm Moses. And he introduced me to the other guy, and I'm like, I go, oh, what's going on? I start talking to him, and what are the odds? It was like Philip and the eunuch. And anyways, I started telling them about healings and about legs growing longer. And I started doing this evangelism in a long tile hallway where everybody in the YMCA was getting to hear some weird stuff. And I'm thinking, these guys are just like our brothers David in Kenya. Forgetting that David's ministry in Kenya is not...
No.
There's all kinds of miracles and stuff. So I go, we saw legs grow long. We saw this, ears open up. And after I get done doing all these witnesses and these testimonies, they looked at me like this. And then they walked off and I went, man, I should have kept my mouth shut. You know, now they think I'm probably crazy. And then as I got back in the car, Yahweh said, you're not supposed to work out, go to your car. So I went and got in the car and I went, did I blow it? And Yahweh says, I got a word as I thought I blew it, as I was giving a testimony. All these big miracles. And Yahweh goes, Aaron, was what you said true? I said, yeah, probably 90%. I have a problem with embellishment. I'm a storyteller. He goes, was it true? I go, yeah. He goes, did you know that I live inside them? Oh, yeah, I know that. He knows that. And he goes, do you know that once you start a testimony like that I can keep that thing going? I never thought about that. He goes, did you know that if you start that testimony, I can keep them up at night going, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing this? I go, I completely forgot about that. He goes, absolutely. He goes, Aaron, when you give a testimony, when all of us give a testimony, he gets inside of him. He goes, amen! 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 Because there's somebody who lives inside of him. There's an inner witness. Turn to 2 Timothy 1:6. That'd be page 218 New Testament. Two Bibles. Okay, Elijah, would you read chapter 1, verse 6, please?
For which cause I put thee in remembrance to be stirring up Elohim's gift of favor, which is in thee, through means of the laying on of thy hand.
Go ahead and read verse 7. Okay.
For Elohim hath not given us a spirit of cowardness, but of power and love and correction.
There's something that's real neat. Now this isn't going to be exactly applied, but it's a good mental image. Giving a testimony to somebody, there's a power to it that is different than just quoting scriptures. I don't understand it. I've had somebody quote scriptures. I know these scriptures, but then all of a sudden they give me a testimony how this thing worked, and all of a sudden some starts waking up. I don't understand it. I don't think anything can replace the scriptures. Scriptures is absolutely, it's bread of life. We have to have it, right? But the testimonies that go along with it, that there's a stirring up. And I believe when we give a testimony, it's like stirring up the coals within somebody. All of us have a coal. As long as we have Christ inside of us, which we always have, right? There's sleeping coals. Have you ever seen that with somebody? They're a believer, but it looks like all the lights are off. And Yahweh goes, and he breathes on that coal. And I believe that when we give our testimony, specifically with the testimonies that he tells us to give, it's not just giving testimonies, it's walking by the Spirit. And we should be looking at each person and going, I see coals in you. I see coals in this man and this woman. I see coals in this woman, this man, this man, this man, this woman. Yahweh, what will breathe on those coals to stir up the gift that is within them? What will awaken a gyro, the dreams you have inside her? What will get Melania to pay attention? I don't know. But, and Yahweh knows. He knows what will breathe directly onto your coal to go, wake up! I haven't given up yet! I haven't given up yet! And we give those testimonies, they stirred up, and if they're a believer, guess what? Yahweh will keep that ball going. Have you ever had that where somebody gave you a testimony, and go, that guy's an idiot! What an idiot! And I walked off. 4 years later, that one story that guy told me would never go away. I forgot about millions. I forgot about combinations of the locks. I forgot about passwords and emails. And this one testimony, and then all of a sudden I go, wait a minute, was that you? Yes, it was me, Aaron, and that's why I have not forgotten what I've been doing. He's been sitting there going, oh, this testimony. And here's the other thing. Well, what about unbelievers? Giving testimonies to unbelievers, and here's something what's neat about that. Yahweh tells you to give a testimony to who's an unbeliever or a Muslim or something like that. Now, they wouldn't have the coals inside them necessarily, would they? But what if Yahweh tells you to walk up to an unbeliever, a biker guy who hates Jesus Christ, and he goes, you go tell them how your sister got healed. You walk, I'm going to go tell them. They're going to reject it. What's the point of that? You tell them the testimony. They don't have any coals in there. So what's the point, right? Could he send somebody else to give the same testimony? How about three people within a week? And all of a sudden, there's three people giving a testimony how a sister got awakened from the dead. The guy goes, what the heck's called being haunted? I'm being haunted. Here this thing is. And absolutely. You can bring Ruth up here. It'd be good for Melania, too. How powerful are testimonies? So you can look at this little girl right here. She's not supposed to be here. Did you know you're not supposed to be here?
No, she did not know that.
There was a dream inside of her mother that told her to go back and have their tubes retied. And the other dreams to go do something, to dream something big. And in my opinion, it was something like Jacob's love for Rachel, this impossible thing. And she didn't quit. Now look at this. She had a lot riding on that, didn't it? What kind of testimony is this? I had another person I was witnessing to about Planned Parenthood dicing up children, and the guy goes, "Well, I don't know. I'm kind of on both sides. Here's this guy; he's not trying." And I go, "What do you think about like late term abortion and stuff like this?" And he goes, "I don't know if they're humans." I said, "Come here, Melania. Melania is not supposed to be here. Her mom wasn't supposed to be able to have a baby. It was impossible. Her mother chose to believe." And she didn't quit. Did you know that? I think you knew that, right? All the odds were against your mom cannot have a baby. And she didn't quit. She didn't quit. And look who's here. Ta-da! Look at this testimony.
Look how early she was born, too. She was born way earlier than she was supposed to be. Yep.
30 weeks. Melania was the size of a small sandwich when she was born. And I gave that testimony. Here's this guy who said he was a Catholic. And he goes, I don't know about Planned Parenthood and abortions and stuff like that. And I go, that's interesting. I said, I think my niece was born 8 months. She's only 8 months old when she got delivered. He goes, she's alive? I go, I'll show you a picture of her. I showed her a picture of this testimony. You know what he did? He got sick to his stomach. Because he was saying, these aren't even humans. I go, there's one right there. Look at these testimonies. So, with all these things, you got testimonies that nobody else has. It doesn't matter if people believe it. Take your testimonies, think of them as sparks. Be a sparkler for Yahweh and Jesus Christ. Wherever you go, set your sparks out. And whether they take it or not, I don't care. I'm going to shine for Him. I'll go ahead and have a prophecy. We'll have a group of prophecies also, since I kind of say this for the end. According to 1 Corinthians 14, we thank You, Father, for Your Word. We thank You, Jesus Christ. You live inside of us and You are in this room. We thank You that when we give Your testimonies, it's like bragging on a relative or someone we love that's right in the room. And how wonderful is it to get to brag, even my brother who's here or my dad, you get to go brag on them in front of people. We thank You that when we give testimonies and we stand up for You, You're right there. We thank You for Your Word, for Telios Ministries and Joshua Generation, for the words we're about ready to hear. My sons and my daughters, know that I stand tall for You and I'm proud. I look off into the future the way a tall, 100-foot-tall father looks for his children. And I have wings bigger than you ever imagined to protect you, to shield you, and to groom you up. But I am also asking you to grow up. Even though you might be old in your own eyes or in your own age, you're not grown up with me, and you'll never be a grown up. You'll always be my child. So I always will tell you to climb another mountain. Summit. Climb to another summit. Do another feat. Start another business. Start another ministry. Do something that's impossible. Why do I ask you to keep doing these things? Because it's a relationship with you and me of us doing things that are impossible. So go do these things and spread my word. So if anybody else, go ahead.
Yeah.
My children, you are all like frosting. You, much, very, very much of you are just white, normal white. You want to stick in with the crowd. I want you to be green, blue, yellow, purple, all the bright colors, not just white or black.
My children, there is a huge, huge apple tree. I want you to be... There are bad apples in that tree. And I want you to be a delicious, juicy apple. One that when you bite into them, the juice just runs down your face. I want you to be one of those apples. I don't want you to be just a regular plain apple. I want you to be one of those perfect apples.
You know my sons, and you're like a precious jewel. There's a ton of you, but I don't want you to be this be as the normal shapes and the normal colors. I want you to be the colors that I want you. I want to be every single color that I made you. I don't want you to this be normal jewels and not pretty and the normal shapes. But you are the precious one, and I don't want you to be that dirty one out there with all dirt all over it. I want you to be all clean and so shiny, and that's what I want you to be, and I made you that way.
You're like a light bulb, and a lot of people, the light bulbs are out, but you, your light bulb is on. I want your light bulb to be on, and you to tell others about me, and their light bulb to be on, they'll tell their friends, and then soon, a lot of people will have their light bulbs on, and then you know that you started all that, and I told you, and that because of you now, a lot of people know about me.
My sons and daughters, I have prepared for you a great feast that you are welcome to come and partake. And by shying away or not partaking does not mean that the feast is still not prepared. It just means that you are not present to take part of this feast. And so this feast is made, it is out, and it is ready for you. Whether you come to take it or not makes no difference. It is there. You are my sons and daughters, and I have adopted you in. You are as family, and it was through my son that you have been made whole. So come before me that I may be able to commune with you, that I may be able to speak with you directly. For it is your righteousness through my son that has given pathway that I am able to deliver and work through you.
Know that I see through your eyes. I've seen your lowly times, and I've seen your high highs. I've seen your greatness that you've seen, and I've seen you on your hands and knees crawling. But you've got to stand up and come back to me, and we will climb those mountains together so you can see the greatness again.